You are listening to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and role-playing gamers.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.
Hello and welcome to another episode of On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and the people who play them. My name is Eran Aviram.
And my name is Uri Lifshitz. Hello!
And today we shall discuss a topic that is mainly for GMs, but players, you should probably listen to it as well, because it revolves around you guys. It's about derailing the campaign and then getting back on track.
Some would say that that is the purpose of players in a role-playing game.
Generally speaking, yes, that's part of the interaction, that's part of the fun, that's why as a GM, that's one of the reasons I come to the table. I want my players to surprise me. But before we get into the details, a request. We have a very long list of topics of our own, things that we have thought about and we would like to talk about in the future, but your topics, things that you send us, are like these yummy sprinkles on top, are like the fuel that burns the night oil. I don't know. It's the thing that I like. I want it. Send it to me, and then I will be able to be happy. Do you want me to be happy? Send me an email to show@dwarfcast.net. It doesn't really have to be anything that you're currently preoccupied with, something that is super important to your game in this current week. It can be anything at all that you're wondering about relating to role-playing games, and we might not be able to answer it. But the only way to find this out is if you'll send us an email, and then we'll start a discussion, and we'll get to something, it'll be fun, and maybe there'll be an episode of it, etc., etc. But I was derailing the topic. Uri, let's get back on track.
Thank you very much for that lovely example of how to derail something from its purpose. So, dear listeners, some lucky few of you are thinking to yourself, what is derailing? This has never happened in my campaign. When I plan a campaign, I execute it flawlessly, and my players are all happy and doing exactly what is expected of them as grand heroes and adventurers. Well, good sirs and ladies, I salute you. However, my experience has been somewhat different. In my experience, when I plan a campaign, the first thing that happens is that I need to throw half of it away after the first session. There are many reasons why a campaign might derail from the track we have been expecting it to take. We will go over some examples that could cause this, as well as some mechanism of coping with those problems. And hopefully, by the time this episode is done, you will be able to pinpoint what was the cause of your derailment, as well as come up with some solutions to move forward from that moment on.
Personally, I think that the derailment itself is not a negative thing. It's not a bad thing. We tend to look at it as if, ah, ha, ha, you got derailed, ho, ho. And you started your whole spiel here with a lucky few that didn't get to have derailed. But I think that it's not a bad thing. And we started this episode with saying how it's an integral part of role-playing game and something that we actually expect. So what is it that we feel bad about? What is it that is a negative connotation? I think it's the specific moment when the GM realizes they don't know what to do and they feel lost. They have no idea what is now supposed to happen. And that is an uneasy feeling. It's something that we want to avoid. It makes us cringe. And that is the problem, not the derailment, but our inability as GMs to deal with it. So I think that hopefully this episode and obviously other resources can really help with overcoming this obstacle and making sure that every derailment is part of the fun, like it's supposed to be.
That every derailment is an opportunity rather than a hindrance.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Okay, I'm going to give the four main derailment issues that I have encountered during my last campaigns. Number one, I lovingly title The Squeaky Goblin. This is an NPC that came into play for no important reason. Yet somehow, this NPC, this non-player character, become the focus of attention for all players. It is usually a goblin with a squeaky voice, hence I call it the squeaky goblin, and the whole party would rather talk with the squeaky goblin sitting in the tavern rather than the great magician, I mean the hooded figure sitting alone by the fireplace, or the bloodied soldiers down at the corner, or the group of adventurers whispering about the evil from the north. Sure, you want to go and talk with the goblin. Okay, so Banana Gar is sitting there. He introduces himself. He's a simple farmer goblin that has nothing of interest and simply came to trade fur and grains in the village because of the harsh winter in the mountain, the faraway mountains from whence he came. Yeah, sure, sure, yeah, he has a family. He lives with his wife, Pitchgar, yeah. Oh, you want to hear more about his family? Yeah, he has two kids, Berigar and Applegar. They live in a hut. It's a very small village up north. No, he doesn't have a map. He can't point you to it. You want to hear what his... etc. This will turn into a whole session dedicated to talking with Banana Gar about his family and his woes in life. And what's it like being a goblin at a human king? Oftentimes, Banana Gar would, for some reason, join the party. They will adopt him and continue onward and onward. Obviously, this could derail the adventure for one session, two sessions, or more. My second point is titled The Not MacGuffin. As we all know, a MacGuffin is that item or something that the plot revolves around. But sometimes the party will decide that a certain item or a certain clue or a certain person is actually the MacGuffin, is very important to the plot, and they must follow it, guard it, do something with it, when this is obviously just a random object that was found laying by the wayside.
It's a red herring that was not placed by the GM, but decided on by the players.
A pink herring, shall we say.
A pink herring, yes.
Number three is the misconception. The players have decided that they got it all figured out, but of course they have figured it out wrong. Meaning, okay, we need to get this orb of power back to the great wizard Knarkarang, but maybe he's the bad guy and we should totally give this orb of power to Banana Gar, the goblin farmer, who would use it to light up his cottage at night but no longer be afraid of the dark. Misconceptions abound, could totally derail your campaign to new and weird directions. Number four is quite similar to the misconception, but a lot more focused. I call it the paranoid character. This is the point where the party decide that they cannot trust nor listen to any information coming from this or that NPC. And that is almost always an NPC that you have decided will be their main and reliable source of information for your adventure. That basically block your ability to give the player new information that they could then act on. Now, I'm sure these rang a few bells from your previous campaigns, be you players or GMs, and I would offer three very easy-to-use coping mechanisms how to subvert those. The first and foremost, in my opinion, is the yes-and approach. Simply take this new thing that came into being and incorporate it into your campaign. This approach is also known as rolling with it or make it true. You have a squeaky goblin? Excellent! Apparently he was also on his way to the Castle of Doom because of an ancient goblin prophecy. You have a squeaky goblin? Apparently he's a good tracker and could help you find your way in the mountain where the Castle of Doom is located. If the players are interested in the Not MacGuffin, oh, yes, the Not MacGuffin is actually totally related to the actual MacGuffin. Maybe it would lead you to it. Maybe it's lost and the same people who has the MacGuffins are looking for him. The player have misconceptions? They got it all wrong? Excellent! I'm gonna change the whole world to fit the misconceptions of the player and move forward. The players are paranoid because of this really trusty king's advisor that kept helping them for the last year and a half, and now they suddenly became paranoid of him? Excellent! They're right to fear him. He has now been taken over by an evil demon. Of course, in some cases, you can't do that, because it would be in opposition of other things you have already placed in the world, and you don't want to retcon so much. So a lot of time, I choose to subvert these railroads into side quests. Why not? Just because something is not important in this specific plot doesn't mean it's not important in the grand scheme of things. This could be a great subplot or a lead to a future plot. You have a squeaky goblin? Excellent! Let's go, help his village, move on to the Castle of Doom. There is a not MacGuffin? Awesome! This is a MacGuffin of a different plot. Go, return the Bloodstone to the Dark Elves so they can summon Loth, the Spider Queen, and move on. There's a misconception about the world? Apparently you think Dark Elves have replaced everyone in the castle? Cool! Go, kill the Dark Elves, and we can move forward to the Castle of Doom. You have become paranoid that the King Advisor is actually some sort of a traitor? Excellent! Go, kill him, discover he's hired by the Squeaky Goblin, move forward! And of course, there is always the options of giving up. Take your whole plot, throw it in the garbage, and accept that you have a new plot. The old plot is dead, long live the new plot! We will go, and we will help Banana Girl rebuild his village after the last snowstorm. And we will find a way to make amends between him and his loving wife, Peach Girl. And maybe teach little Berry Girl how to hunt. Or Tiny Apple Girl, that sweet little goblin child, teach her how to wield a sword so one day she could be a warrior princess for her tribe. Yes, this is our plot now. The Girl family. May Gromash bless their souls.
I very much disagree with that last point, and I have several other thoughts about the points previously, so let's go through it through my point of view.
Gromash care not what you believe in, foolish human.
And I summarize the whole thing under 3 points. The first thing is trust and conceit. The conceit is the thing that we've agreed that we are now doing. If we are here to play a game about FBI agents in modern day fighting against vampires, hidden vampires, that have actually been controlling the whole world government behind the scenes for hundreds of years, then running around after the goblin child, first of all, it'd be weird because there are no goblins in the modern world, but let's say there are, running around after the goblin child is not what the game is about. And you as a player is playing wrong. That's not a good play. That's not how we play this game. This is not what we came here to do. The conceit, the thing that we have all agreed is the core of the game, requires us, all of us, players as well, to remain focused on specific topics, on specific things. So if this is a general, generic, running around a fantasy world sort of game, if that's the conceit, then there are no plots. Not really. There's only what we are currently doing. And then what Uri just said works perfectly well. Side quests, main quests, whatever. There's no point for it. You just do whatever you want. And the GM from the get-go said, you can just do whatever you want. That's my GM voice. That's not my GM voice.
That's not your GM voice.
If, on the other hand, the game was all about fighting the evil master of the giant evil castle, and then you start running around after goblins, you are failing the game. You are playing wrong. It's not a matter of opinion. It's the simple fact. We said we are here to play to defeat the giant, horrible... I don't think you said they're giant. Just evil Nightmare King, right?
It's not the gnomish Castle of Doom. It's the Castle of Doom. It's not the kind of castle you would look at and say, what is this? A castle for ants?
Good point. And the point of the conceit is intertwined with trust. Because players should trust their GM, that the GM is trying to play the game that we've agreed on. So even if it seems like we're not going directly to the Castle of Doom, it might be that the story is still about it. We just haven't yet realized how or why. Think of it like when you are watching a TV show about, let's say, the Castle of Doom. But the first 2 episodes have very little to say about a castle or about any Doom. And yet, if you trust the people behind the show that they know what they're doing, then you are giving in and saying, sure, I will accept that all the things that you are currently telling me are important, even though I'm not as of yet sure how they are important or in what way they will become important later, but I trust you. And that's crucial in a role-playing game because there's only one person in front of you, the GM, and you need to trust them. As a player, you have so much power over the game, you can push it wherever you want. You must come to some understanding so that the game actually goes where everyone wants it to go. If you as a player use your power to push against the GM because you don't trust them, even if you think you are playing for the conceit, you might be ruining the game. If you, the GM, do nothing to earn the trust, then even if your first two chapters are amazing, but at no point did you at least hinted at a doomed castle of doom, dooming doom, then you are playing wrong as the GM. You are fighting against the conceit. Oh, but if they will play only a few more sessions, we don't have time for a few more sessions. Manage expectations. Make sure that if we are here to play for, like, let's say 12 weeks, it's a game of about 12 weeks, don't wait until week 5 to put the doomed castle in. Put some sort of doom, at least in episode 1 or 2, at least in the background, so we know that we can trust you to guide our hand until we eventually reach, probably, a doomed castle of some sort. We talked a lot about this on episode 36, Subtle Railroading, and so I highly recommend that you go and listen to that. My next point is, sure, yes, okay, so you've talked about conceit, etc., but that's all at the beginning of the game. Let's say something did happen and we did got derailed during the game. How do we fix this? And here I completely agree with Uri, and I would like to add some points about how, about the techniques of how I try to bring the game back on some sort of rails, even if not completely railroaded. And that's working with fronts. A front is a concept I first came to know through Dungeon World. It's free. You can go to dungeon-world.something or just search for Dungeon World and you'll find it. They have the whole SRD, the System Reference Documents, for free. You can look at it and you can read what are fronts and how to use them. I don't use them exactly as written there, but the main concept is this. You have some fundamentals about powerful forces in the world. These fundamentals are the capabilities and the motivation. So, for example, we can say there's the Castle of Doom. Of course, the third fundamental is name. It must have a name. So, the Castle of Doom. The capabilities of the Castle of Doom is, for example, a giant army, some dragons, and powerful
of
sorcerer.
Of the undead,
yes, everyone is undead.
Powerful sorcerer, sure. Of the undead.
And then motivation is something. Like, for example, maybe the powerful sorcerer wants to increase their army. Or maybe the powerful sorcerer wants to conquer city XYZ. They must have a motivation, something that they are trying to achieve. And now, when you have some of these several powers, actors like these, you then set them with vectors. Vectors are simply plans. I call them vectors because it's an arrow pointing them somewhere. And it might change as things progress throughout the game. For example, if the players decide to go with the goblin instead of going after the castle, the squeaky goblin specifically, not just any goblin, then good for them. But the vector of the castle didn't change because of that. Because they didn't do anything. And the players are the only one in the world that are worthy of talking about. They are the only people who can do anything. They are the players of the game, of course. So if they didn't do anything, the power of the Castle of Doom must increase in some way. Their plans are coming into fruition. They have conquered the city. They have larger armies that can now be seen throughout the land or something like that. And now the players know that there are consequences to whatever it is that they're doing. So maybe don't start with such a balanced display of power. Maybe don't increase the power of the main villain immediately. But if you have even small fronts, like even the village council can be a front. The winter season can be a front. Anything can be a front if it affects the game on a large scale. It has some capabilities that you know what they are and a motivation. And once the players go up against some of them and realize they have an effect on the world and the world is not just sitting and waiting for them, they will, from their own motivation, decide to go and do stuff because they realize if they don't do stuff, stuff happens to them.
The motivation of the Castle of Doom is to conquer the neighboring goblin kingdom. The vector is they're sending specifically General Agigi with their army to conquer that, and that takes a week. That's the time frame in which you have to derail that vector from approaching its final goal.
I'll be completely frank, in my games, time frames play very little. Or maybe they do. They play some role, but they are quite generalistic. I'm playing in 50 Fathoms, a game where I have a lot of fronts going around, like six or so. Some of them I haven't even written down. They're just in my head. I just generally know who is doing what and what they want to do and what they're capable of. And in that game, because it's pirates over an open sea and everything takes weeks, I don't really care how much time things will take. I just know that if the players haven't actually touched on a topic for, let's say, a long time, then that thing has probably progressed. I don't really take measure of time. But it is important that if in your game time has relevance and days are an important unit that you keep track of, then you do know how many days things take. Yes, we talked about this on episode 46, how we prepare for games, in which we discussed, at least I discussed, fronts. And also we talked about how to create organizations and powers and decide what is an important power in the world. I probably don't need the village elders to be a front, but maybe I do if the game all happens in the village and if I want to conflict them against, for example, the church or something. So we talked about that on Disorganization, episode 38. My third and final part is about managing scenes, or as I just call it, add a scene, remove a scene. When something happens during the game that you were not expecting, and it is the sort of mostly the misconceptions or the paranoid characters, when generally speaking, the story should continue on a specific trajectory, and yet suddenly, for some reason, it's derailed, you probably want to add a scene or remove a scene. Or manage some scenes. Why? Because if you add a transitional scene that you weren't expecting to have, you can now use it to guide the players back to the original next scene that they were supposed to get to. Think in terms of fundamentals. There are some fundamental scenes. There are some scenes that must happen in your vision of the story. Now think about what's not actually fundamental about them. What's not essential about them. Like, for example, the final fight with the villain. Does it have to be over a bridge in a lava-filled room? Can it?
Yes.
Can it perhaps be when the villain reveals themselves in the court of the queen as their advisor instead? And then maybe cast some fire magic or something? Think about the fundamental scene where they discover that the MacGuffin actually has magical powers. Does it has to be the MacGuffin that has magical powers? Maybe it's the person that was handing them the MacGuffin that has magical powers? Maybe even that person didn't know they have magical powers. It doesn't really matter. Think about what's actually important about the scene. The information that needs to be delivered is probably more important than the person delivering the information, or the way the information is delivered, or even what the information is technically about. Someone is hunting you and wants to destroy you. Okay, sure. But are you trying to just make the players fear for their lives, increase the tension? Or are you trying to make it clear to them that there is a specific assassin that is on their heels? Because these are two different pieces of information, and you might be able to change some things around on the fly to make sure that the important thing to you is what actually being delivered. And you might need some more time for it. Like, for example, if they arrive at the MacGuffin and it doesn't have magical powers for some reason, I don't know what derailed, what is the thing that derailed us, but maybe you've decided that because the MacGuffin can't have magical powers, it must be the person in charge of the MacGuffin, but the person is not here for some reason. Again, might be because they had to be called away somewhere because something else was derailed before. Okay. So the scene in which they get the magical MacGuffin, non-magical MacGuffin, will not be the height of the session then, because nothing much happens. It might even be comedic, because they reach a MacGuffin and they rub the lamp and no genie comes out. And it should be funny or weird or something like that. Use it to make sure that something funny or interesting is happening, but not as the fundamental thing you were aiming for. Make it a transitional scene. And then later on, maybe immediately later on, when they meet the person who is now magical, make that into the actual fundamental scene. Make the, I don't know, probably birds come around from out of the window and land on their shoulders, and there's a halo, and they glow, and there's dramatic angelic music from somewhere, probably from you. You probably go like, oh, or something like that. Think in terms of fundamentals and also of the dramatic trend of the session. So far, we haven't actually talked about the session. We've talked about the story and stuff like that. But if the derailment happens at the start of the session, it will probably be good to try and push things back, good for you and good for the game, if you manage to push things back toward where you wanted things to happen. And then you can keep to the dramatic trend that you envisioned. You wanted there to be a big hurrah at the end, so you are building tension toward it. And the minor derailment at the beginning was a hiccup, something that you didn't expect, but you can overcome, maybe even use in some way to build some more tension. But if the derailment happens in the middle or the end, you might need to rethink this session. This might not be the session in which we discover the magical, amazing secret and we are all amazed and the players all cheer. It might be that this session is a build-up to the next session when this will then have to happen. Because some sort of derailment just made it so that there's no more tension. Maybe they started running after the squeaky goblin, and that's not very dramatic. It might be a lot of fun, but a big reveal should probably not come immediately afterward. So think in session terms, think in dramatic terms as well as you go through it, and always go back to your fundamentals. Is it really important? The thing that I wanted to do, does it need to happen here? Does it need to happen with this person or object? And does it need to happen in these points in the game, in this session? We talked a lot about this on episode 10, Pacing, which is still one of our most important episodes ever.
Ever. Now, some of you are thinking, we're players. This does not concern us. It is our job, as you have mentioned, to derail the campaign toward what interests us. And you're absolutely right. However, there is a lot you can do once you understand that your choices have impacted the GM in a negative way. For example, you can ask guiding questions that will alert the GM to what interests you. You can even simply say out loud what interests you. Okay, you have entered a tavern, there's a group of wounded soldiers, there's someone who is definitely a leech lord in the corner, and there's a goblin sitting at the bar. Wow! That goblin seems interesting for me because he's quite out of place in a bar where there are a wounded soldier and a leech lord. I'm gonna go and find out what's the deal with him. See, you have given the GM so much information here about what interests you and why. And it's fine to say things like, oh my god, that goblin has such a squeaky voice. I wanna keep talking with him just to make the GM keep using that squeaky voice.
Yes.
That is hilarious.
Yes. Being open about your desires and what you think about the game and what interests you is really useful to the GM. Another way around, if the GM sees that the players are doing something that he thinks is against the conceit of the game, against the assumptions, he can say, guys, this is not what we agreed that we want to play. Are we going to change the game? I'm fine with it. Just let's talk about it.
And it doesn't have to be in a negative tone.
No, not at all.
I'm going to give you an example from one of my previous games, which was simply, guys, I'm just reminding you that this is a film noir murder mystery. However, if you want the rest of this session to continue with your character at the club, going on stage and telling joke at the stand-up open mic night, that's cool with me. See, I've communicated to the player that this is not the main point of the game. However, if this is something that interests them and they're enjoying themselves, let's roll with it, and maybe next session we'll go back on track and continue the plot in a film noir murder mystery closed room kind of game. In role-playing games, like relationship, like life, being open about what you really want and communicating that to your partners in that specific context is priceless.
And we talked about that on episode 70, feedback, giving and receiving feedback, and how to do it in a mature and actually, frankly, quite easy way.
I think that summarizes our points very clearly. If you have other ways of dealing with derailment, be it from the player side or from the GM side, we would love to hear more about this from you. Drop us an email to show@dwarfcast.net. Talk with us on our Facebook group. Tweet at us at our Twitter handle, @dwarfpodcast.
Or at our private Twitter handles. That works as well. I'm @NNESK.
I am at Uri Lifshitz.
Good luck with that.
Good luck with that.
I have one final thing to say about this episode, as if I haven't mentioned enough previous episodes, but there's one final one I want to talk about. It's about setting difficulty levels. It's episode 12. It's very technical. We talked about how to make sure that the party is not, for example, destroyed by a random encounter, or how to make sure that the boss isn't destroyed by the party in a single hit, if you want indeed to make sure that these things don't happen. And it's an important episode for combats, but it's also pretty useful for this topic because it is a sort of derailment. It's something that happens that you might not expect at all to happen if, for some reason, the mechanics just don't work like you expected it. Things are way more or less difficult than you wanted. So setting difficulty levels, episode 12, should probably be called adjusting difficulty levels now that I think of it, because it's mostly about how to do it on the fly. That's it. That's us. That's everything. I think it's time to take the load off.
This world is carried on the shoulders of the dwarves.
Uri, what have you been doing that relates to role-playing games in this past week?
Well, Iran, thank you for asking. Yesterday, I had a very interesting experience. I played a game in an adventure which I wrote, but I was not the GM. No, I was merely one of the players, and another GM ran it, and it's an amazing experience because you keep wanting to answer questions that other players are asking or to remind the GM every tiny detail that he may have forgotten. I wasn't sure going in how I would feel during the game, but because I had an amazing GM and excellent players, I managed to really relax and play along, and I had loads of fun, and I got so much feedback. Feedback from playtesting is different.
Different, yes.
Yes, it's different from... I mean, it's a skill that I have because I've been working as a product manager for years now. Mm. And product testing is a very important element of that. But every time you shift to a new field, you need to retrain those muscles to be attuned to specific things. And playtesting role-playing adventures for the purpose of publishing them is a new skill for me. I don't tend to run the same game again and again often, which is different when you're writing something to be published.
Mm.
But luckily for me, I got really good reviews and really good feedback, and hopefully in about a month, I think it would be ready for publishing.
Hooray! We should mention, not your first adventure to be published.
No, my first was Escaping Thelemus Lab. It's on DriveThruRPG. Go, get it!
Yes, links in the show notes.
This new adventure is a short, standard, classical adventure. It is a comedy adventure, something that, as I've mentioned before, I think there's not enough of.
Yes.
But it's also a guide on how to run...
Comedic adventure.
Comedic adventures.
I should mention, Paranoia XP, it's the previous version of Paranoia, two versions ago, sort of, was an excellent guide on how to run... comedic games in general, and of course Paranoia games in specifically, because it is a comedic game, but it has a very specific flavor. And unfortunately, it's the only guide I know of how to play humoristic games, because humor is hard. Comedy is hard. So actually teaching a person, the GM, how to run a comedic game and making sure that the players also are open-minded to learn some stuff, because you need a specific mindset. You need players that, like with Hall, players that are able to agree to some sort of an atmosphere in which they might not be the most funny thing, and they might... I mean, making jokes around the table is fun, but that's not a comedic game. It's a big thing. Good luck with that, Uri.
Yeah. So far, so good.
As for me, I've been sick most of the week, actually. And yes. And even worse, I haven't played.
That's terrible. That's the saddest thing I've heard in the last year.
I played some video games, but I don't yet have anything interesting to say about them. But I might have. I might have at some point in the future. I'm thinking about making an episode in which we talk about video games and the specific lessons that we can learn from specific video games, mostly unusual indie games that I get to play here and there, and what we can take from them and import into our games, especially in the form of narrative or using mechanics to do all sorts of interesting stuff, because video games are exploring this space all the time. All the time. Any new indie game or okay, not every new indie game, but many new indie games are trying new things with the way that they approach the player, and that creates different experiences. Most of them are not relevant, you know, in a role-playing game, just have nothing to do with role-playing games. But some of them seems to me, at least, like they can be a new form of discussion, something new for us to talk about that we haven't maybe talked about before. And when I say we, I don't mean specifically you and me, Uri. I mean role players in general. So let's do an episode about it in the future. If you guys have any concept, ideas, games that you would like to recommend for this episode, this sort of episode that you think we should talk about, or you have something to say about it, send us an email to show@dwarfcast.net, or look for us all over the internet. Or, of course, dwarfcast.net is where you can just find everything. Everything! And with that, we shall say... Later
on the Shoulders of Dwarves is shared under Creative Commons by Attribution Non-Commercial 4. Intro and outro are by The Cliché Dio, and you can email us at show@dwarfcast.net.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.
So Iran, what is this Crystal Heart which I've been hearing so much about?
Crystal Heart is a role-playing game based on Savage Worlds where you get to play awesome agents carrying crystals that give you superpowers and change your personality, running around a strange, awesome world looking for more crystals.
For more information about the Crystal Heart campaign setting, please visit up2fourplayers.com/crystalheart.